one of the things we're trying to do today is sort of de-escalate the situation, right? Issuing a subpoena against the governor doesn't do that.
The legislature outlines the next step in the Troopergate investigation. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 5th of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, lawmakers prepare to look at the high price of gas in Alaska.
Why does it take so long for the price of gasoline to respond when oil is declining?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Grant Station, finding grants for nonprofit organizations, schools, and governmental agencies throughout the U.S. and Canada. Grant Station, fast track to funding. On the web at grantstation.com.
A combined House and Senate Judiciary Committee will meet a week from today to consider issuing subpoenas in the legislative investigation into the events surrounding the firing of Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan. Since Governor Sarah Palin pledged full cooperation with the investigation, seven witnesses have canceled interviews with investigator Steve Branchflower. Senate Judiciary Chairman Hollis French says the committee has to decide what to do about that.
I would expect Mr. Branchflower to come forward and sort of describe his efforts to secure the statements of the witnesses and their reactions and their cancellations of the agreed-to interview dates.
A further hearing would be scheduled for the return of the subpoenas, where witnesses would be ordered to testify before the entire committee. But French says Governor Palin will not be issued a subpoena to testify.
One of the things we're trying to do today is sort of de-escalate the situation, right? Issuing a subpoena against the governor doesn't do that. And I think given her many public statements about wanting to cooperate, plus, you know, her obviously crazy schedule, it just seemed completely unnecessary to issue a subpoena for her.
The Anchorage Daily News is reporting that Republican Representative John Coghill of North Pole called on French to step down as manager of the Branchflower probe, saying he no longer had confidence in French's objectivity. Coghill said he was concerned about media statements French had made, including that Branchflower's report could be a damaging October surprise for Palin and that she faces possible impeachment. French says he's not doing the investigation. Steve Branchflower is. French says the committees will discuss and decide whether to issue subpoenas for eight individuals, four of whom work for the Department of Administration. The others are the director of the governor's Anchorage office, Chris Perry, director of management and budget, Karen Rehfeld, director of boards and commissions, Frank Bailey, who is now on paid administrative leave, and formerly legislative liaison, John Bitney. French also says the committee will accelerate its report on the investigation, receiving Branchflower's findings on October 10th. The deadline was originally set for October 31st.
It's become clear in the last week that that would be an unfair date to have a report come out. You know, we never knew the governor was going to be on the national ticket. So we're moving it up considerably to October 10th to give everybody time to digest the contents of the report and to give them a fair chance to respond to whatever is in there.
The union that represents Trooper Wooten filed an ethics complaint against Governor Palin and members of her administration earlier this week. John Sear is head of the Public Safety Employees Association. He says the recorded calls Palin released on the matter show Wooten's files were breached.
When Frank Bailey's recorded conversation with Lieutenant Dial came out, it seemed obvious to us at the time that he had improper access to Mike Wooten's personnel file, to his workers' comp file, and it looks like, and it certainly sounds like, his employment application, which is sealed.
Sear says there may be criminal penalties, and if so, he hopes anyone involved is prosecuted. Governor Palin's attorney, Thomas Van Flein, did not respond to a request for comment. John McCain and Sarah Palin agree on many things, but on others, like climate change, the Republican running mates don't see eye to eye. KTOO's John Ryan takes a look at what Governor Palin has said and done about Alaska's changing climate.
Sarah Palin didn't mention climate change in her acceptance speech Wednesday night. The only time she referred to the environment was when she was mocking Barack Obama.
What does he actually seek to accomplish after he's done turning back the waters and healing the planet?
In an interview published last week in the conservative magazine Newsmax.com, Palin said global warming will affect Alaska more than any other state because of our location, but she said she's not one who would attribute it to being man-made. Palin told the Fairbanks Daily News Miner last December, quote, "I'm not an Al Gore doom and gloom environmentalist blaming the changes in our climate on human activity, but I'm not going to put my head in the sand and pretend there aren't changes." Palin may be taking a politically pragmatic approach by acknowledging the reality of climate change, but not what's causing it. She can seek federal funding for helping Alaska deal with immediate problems like melting permafrost and eroding coastal villages, and she doesn't have to blame the oil production that funds the state government. But virtually all scientists who study the phenomenon agree that humans are changing the climate with our emissions of greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide. The climate also varies naturally, but the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, and even the Bush administration's Climate Change Science Program all say the more we continue to pollute the atmosphere, the more warming is in store for the world. Aaron Hood is a hydrologist at the University of Alaska Southeast and a member of Juno's scientific panel on climate change.
There's a very strong consensus that human activities are affecting global climate. And I think the curious thing about her position, if it is in fact that human activities are not influencing climate, is that that position directly contradicts not only Al Gore, but also John McCain and George Bush, all of whom have come out and said, Bush much more recently, that human activity is, in fact, changing global climate.
Senators John McCain and Barack Obama have both sponsored legislation to cap emissions of carbon dioxide. McCain frequently mentions the need to reduce carbon emissions in his stump speeches, though he did not do so in his presidential nomination speech Thursday night. Governor Palin's most significant action on climate change came last September when she created a subcabinet on climate change. The subcabinet has focused mostly on how to provide immediate help to eroding villages and how the state can adapt as its climate heads into unfamiliar territory. The McCain campaign on Wednesday pointed to the subcabinet's work when it called Palin a leader on climate change. The subcabinet has also started looking at ways Alaska might reduce its climate-changing emissions. Subcabinet Chair Larry Hartig with the Department of Environmental Conservation was out of the office this week and couldn't be reached. Kate Troll with the Alaska Conservation Alliance serves on an advisory group to the subcabinet. She says until Governor Palin sets a goal for reducing emissions, the group's work will be hamstrung.
Most states, the governor steps forward and says, can you please produce a plan that would achieve 60% reduction by, say, 2050? We're not doing any of that. It's the same thing as asking a contractor to sort of build a showcase stadium without a blueprint.
Palin's proclamation establishing the subcabinet says Alaska's climate change strategy must be built on sound science and the best available facts. It also says the strategy must recognize Alaska's interest in economic growth and the development of its resources. The same day Palin created the subcabinet, she announced Alaska would not be joining 7 Western states and 4 Canadian provinces in the Western Climate Initiative. Instead, Alaska is an observer of the initiative. The governors and provincial premiers participating in the initiative have agreed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 15% or more in less than 15 years. They're pursuing a market-based cap-and-trade system to reduce emissions region-wide. Alaska inventoried its greenhouse gas emissions in January, but the state has no goal for reducing those emissions. In Juneau, I'm John Ryan.
Alaskans can expect the highest permanent fund dividend ever this year. Lieutenant Governor Sean Parnell announced the amount today of $2,069. Added to that will be a one-time energy payment of $1,200 for a total of nearly $3,300 for each Alaskan. Close to 500,000 residents will receive their money by direct deposit on September 12th. The remaining checks will be sent out on September 30th and are expected to arrive within a few weeks. The last time the PFD came close to this amount was in 2000, when the payout was just shy of $2,000. The House Judiciary Committee next week will open the first of two planned hearings on the high cost of gasoline and heating oil, particularly looking into why Alaskans pay more for fuel, even though it is refined in the state. Chairman Jay Ramra says he also wants to see if the hearings themselves will help bring down prices, which have not been reduced here as they have in other parts of the nation.
if gas responds to price increases very rapidly, why does it take so long for the price of gasoline to respond when oil is declining?
Rammer says representatives of the state's refineries, Tesoro, Petrostar, and Foothills, will testify, as will station owners and retailers and fuel transporters. On world markets, the price of crude oil has decreased by about a third in the last 2 months. Rammer says reports he's seen indicate they will fall even lower as an international oversupply develops. He recognizes that part of the high price on fuel refined in Alaska comes from a premium paid for North Slope crude oil and for the high price the state gets for selling its royalty oil to the refiners.
Although we don't have a state income tax, the state of Alaska in that way does reach into the back pocket of every Alaskan. Nevertheless, we have seen the price of ANS crude drop from $145 to $105, thereabouts, and we have seen no correlating change in the price of gas.
The second hearing on Alaska fuel prices will come in about a month, and Rammer says members of the committee will then be able to determine if prices have dropped and can evaluate the reason for any change.
We want to see if there's a little Wizard of Oz man standing behind a black cloak who is, whether with malice or otherwise, is sticking it to Alaskan consumers, and we want to see what we can do to get to the root of that.
The hearing on Wednesday is scheduled for all day at the Fairbanks Legislative Offices. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the city of Adak confronts another energy crisis.
We'll have to disconnect meters, remove meters, turn the power off.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, providing tax-advantaged college savings options for Alaska families. T. Rowe Price Investment Services Incorporated, distributor underwriter. Information at 1-888-4, and then Alaska.
APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
The federal government is reviewing the status of three Arctic seals that live off Alaska's coasts to determine if they should be listed under the Endangered Species Act. Yesterday, the National Marine Fisheries Service said there is enough of a question about the health of the seal populations to warrant looking into whether they are threatened or endangered. The agency is responding to a petition by the Center for Biological Diversity, which says the ringed, bearded, and spotted seals are at risk because of global warming. The center's staff biologist Shay Wolf says her group filed a petition in early summer because the seals' sea ice habitat is rapidly melting.
They're completely dependent on the sea ice for rearing their pups, and so that early breakup of sea ice causes mom seals and pups to become separated before the pups are big enough and strong enough to survive.
Last week, scientists at the Colorado-based National Snow and Ice Data Center said the Arctic sea ice had melted to the second lowest point since satellites began taking measurements. The state of Alaska doesn't yet have a position on whether the seals should be listed as endangered, threatened, or kept off the endangered species list. The state's endangered species coordinator, Doug Vincent Lang, says despite that, his office will give input into the federal process.
We typically will start working with the federal agency once this happens and providing the kinds of information that we have available to them to help inform the development of the status review, as well as any population models that they may develop and threat analysis that they may develop.
The public has until November 3rd to weigh in on the status of the ringed, bearded, and spotted seals. They live off Alaska's northern and western coasts in the Bering, Chukchi, and Beaufort Seas. The National Marine Fisheries Service is already looking into whether the ribbon seal should be listed under the Endangered Species Act. The city of Adak is in the middle of another power crisis. It can't afford to pay its bills and plans on starting rolling blackouts tonight and only provide power for 11 hours per day. KIAL's Ann Hillman tried to find out what's causing the problems and what they are doing to fix them.
The city of Adak is in debt for more than $525,000 to the Aleut Corporation, the only fuel provider for the 120-person city in the Central Aleutians. Part of the reason the city is in debt is because Adak Fisheries did not pay over $450,000 in taxes and electric bills to the city. Adak Fisheries representative Dave Frazier says they had a poor fishing season and are still waiting for payment from a customer in Norway.
There's two pieces to it. I mean, first of all, the basic underlying problem is disastrous AC and what that does to cash flow. And then secondly, we haven't been paid for a major portion of the product.
Frazier also says problems stem from the city's erratic and inconsistent billing and accounting procedures. Similar complaints about the city's management of the utility led to a Regulatory Commission of Alaska investigation into the utility's quality of service. The investigation began in January of 2007 and will conclude this October. The city first ran out of fuel in July. To tide them over, the Aleut Corporation agreed to provide fuel for another 60 days and to assume the debts owed to the city by the fisheries. Aleut Corporation President Thomas Mack says he's disappointed that the city did not use the 60 days to develop a plan to solve the situation. He says, quote, "We want the city to be successful, but we can't keep extending a line of credit when it's past due and isn't paid. When's it going to stop? There's no plan. It's like having a teenager with a credit card." Mack says the corporation is financially responsible to 35,000 shareholders, only 13 of whom live in Adak. Adak City Manager Steve Hines says he will not comment on the situation. When asked if the city had a plan to deal with the financial and fuel problems, City Council member and former mayor Will Tillian said they did not.
Entirely premature to make any speculation about those types of things. It's a work in progress. So to speculate would be like going to Las Vegas. I mean, you know, you're trying to find out way too much information that we don't have.
City Council member Chuck Moon says they might consider shutting off power for certain businesses, though they have not yet.
We'll have to disconnect meters, remove meters, turn power off to hopefully induce them to pay their bills.
So would you do that even to larger industries like Adak Fisheries?
If we have to. It's always reluctant to, seeing as how that is a main source of tax revenue for the city.
But City Council member Janet McNall says it's unclear if the city management is doing anything to solve the problem and find more money.
You know, actually, I think we're all kind of dumbfounded at this point. I, as a city council person, could not tell you what they're doing. I have no idea.
The city is responsible for providing power until a private company, TDX, gets approval from the Regulatory Commission to take over the utility. But that won't happen until December at the earliest. In preparation for the sale, TDX power generation technician Bill Bersher examined the generators. He says they haven't had maintenance since 2003 and could stop working at any time.
You could drop a valve anytime. I've seen a lot of them blow up a lot quicker, a lot younger than these. And when they drop a valve, you're done, you know. Pounds of material you dig out of the intake manifolds, it'll suck from cylinder to cylinder and destroy the whole top end of the engine. And so that's any time.
He also says the powerhouse is filled with safety hazards like asbestos, PCBs, and leaking oil. It has no fire-repressant system either. The state already noticed some safety hazards. In 2007, the city was fined $23,000 for safety violations at the electric utility. Bersher also says the powerhouse is grossly inefficient and continuously draws over 100 kilowatts of unnecessary power, wasting expensive fuel. But if the power goes out in Adak, residents say it's more than just an inconvenience. Vince Tudiakoff Sr. says rolling blackouts prevent people from working and force businesses and residents to use extra money to run generators that support freezers full of food and products.
It's a real strange situation that's causing a lot of grief here for community members.
The rolling blackout also limits the number of hours school can be in session because classes cannot be held in a building with no safety warning systems or heat. Councilmember McNall also runs a local grocery store. She says she worries how the faltering city government will affect her future.
If for whatever reason it closes down the city. Our investment in what we hope to be for our future is going to go right down the drain. That scares the hell out of me. Excuse my English.
The city hopes to keep power on intermittently for at least 2 more weeks, which would allow 3 more planes to arrive on the island and transport people off if necessary. In Onalaska, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Division of Elections is working today to count absentee and question ballots in the close Republican primary race between Don Young and Sean Parnell for Alaska's U.S. House seat. Young led Parnell by just 151 votes after primary election night on August 26. There are more than 25,000 ballots included in today's count. Election Division Director Gail Fanumiai says foreign ballots will also have to be counted.
And if any absentee by mail ballots were received in the mail today that were postmarked on Election Day from within the United States and received today, those were not reviewed today because we've been busy getting ready to count. So there is a there will be an additional counting of ballots sometime next week by the members of the State Review Board. It will not be a large quantity of ballots, so I'm pretty certain of that.
Even though the final count is still days away, Fanumiai says today's totals will be significant.
Well, tonight's results should give you a pretty good indication of that because, as I said earlier, there will not be a huge amount of remaining absentee ballots to be counted, including those overseas ones, which have until next Wednesday to be received. I think today's results will probably give people a pretty good idea of where the bottom line is going to be unofficially.
Whichever candidate wins, they will face Democrat Ethan Berkowitz in November. Today's count is likely to come out sometime this evening.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Inlet Tower Hotel and Suites, offering 24-hour business center services, Wi-Fi, high-speed internet connection, and shuttle and railroad service. Information on hotel amenities online at inlettower.com.
This week on AK, a statehood anniversary special. We'll take a look at the forces that moved Alaska closer to becoming a state or held it back. From military to mining, from fish to friendships. That's this week on AK from APRN.
The Alaska Supreme Court has upheld the Matanuska-Susitna Borough's right to levy an excise tax on tobacco. The decision sets a precedent for second-class boroughs in Alaska. The case goes back to May of 2005 when the Borough Assembly adopted an ordinance assessing the tax. Matsu Borough Director John Duffy.
We had some local residents who did not believe that the borough had the authority to levy such a tax, and so they went to court. And now, after 3 years, as you mentioned, the Supreme Court has ruled that the borough does have the right to levy a tobacco tax.
Later in 2005, Matanuska Valley residents Nola Bragg and Link Fannin sued the borough on grounds that the tobacco tax was actually a sales tax requiring voter approval. The Alaska Superior Court ruled that the tobacco tax falls within the borough's powers, but Bragg and Fannin appealed the case. On August 29th of this year, the state's high court sided with the borough. Duffy says an excise tax differs from a sales tax in that it can be levied on only the person who first brings tobacco into the borough. The tax charges about 5 cents per cigarette. The borough collects about $5 million a year on the tobacco tax. Duffy says the tax helps to reduce the use of tobacco by young adults and otherwise lessens long-term health care costs. Alaska Governor Sarah Palin is being praised for delivering an impressive speech Wednesday and accepting the role of running mate to Republican presidential contender John McCain. Palin touted her executive experience and said that if elected president, McCain would use veto power in the public interest. KMXT's Casey Kelly has a look at how well that statement is playing in Kodiak.
Since taking office in 2006, the governor hasn't been shy about using her veto power. She's used it to axe nearly $500 million in projects that state lawmakers have passed in two different budgets. Kodiak State Senator Gary Stevens, who said he was frustrated and perplexed by Palin's last round of vetoes in May, now downplays their importance.
You know, it is true. I mean, of course, it's all perspective, but and it's all how people understand things. But it is true. She did veto the budget. She did stand up and do that. So she's not claiming anything that she didn't do. But I just have to take issue with some of the things that she vetoed. I still think we need them. I think we'll still get them eventually.
The largest local project that Palin vetoed in this year's budget was a $4 million appropriation Stevens had secured for seismic upgrades to Kodiak schools. At the time, Stevens questioned the governor's decision in light of a recent earthquake in the Sichuan region of China, where thousands of children died or were injured in their schoolhouses. But today, Stevens says perhaps he needed to do a better job of stressing the importance of the project to the governor.
You know, we just needed to explain to the governor more what those issues were and why we needed them so much. I can't fault her for doing her job. You know, she did look carefully at the budget, and I just wish that she hadn't cut it where she had. But those are things that we can revisit in the future here.
Stevens, a Republican, says he plans to vote for McCain and Palin in November, but not everyone is thrilled by the prospect of a Palin vice presidency.
Yeah, I just don't think she's very qualified.
Betty O'Dell is the president of the Kodiak Island Borough Board of Education. She says she's still upset about Palin's veto of the school project.
Yeah, that certainly didn't work out for us at all, or for this town. We haven't gotten much in this town at all in the last couple of years.
A Democrat, O'Dell says she'll vote for Barack Obama and Joe Biden this year. Kodiak Island Borough Assemblywoman and Senior Citizens of Kodiak Executive Director Pat Branson also takes issue with Palin's vetoes. She says the governor hasn't done a very good job of explaining why certain projects get vetoed and why others are funded. In 2007, the governor cut $15,000 for facilities repair and equipment at the Kodiak Senior Center from the state supplemental budget. But it's the school project that Branson says she's still looking for answers on.
When you have that kind of safety issue with children and the future of all of us, I think it's most important that those projects are funded. And I think that goes back to the ground rules here of what are the priorities, what are you going to be vetoing and why? And I think that's most important for not just the legislators to understand, but certainly the residents of the state.
Branson says she's registered as an independent and will make the decision about which candidate she votes for based on the ticket that she feels has the strongest domestic agenda. I'm Casey Kelly.
The rock group Heart wants the Republican Party to change its tune. Loudspeakers at the Republican convention blasted Heart's 1977 hit Barracuda this week in honor of Governor Sarah Palin. She was nicknamed Sarah Barracuda in her high school basketball days in Wasilla. Heart's music publisher has sent a cease and desist notice to the McCain-Palin campaign. Ann and Nancy Wilson of Heart say they don't want the campaign using their songs. They told Entertainment Weekly, Sarah Palin's views and values in no way represent us as American women. John Mellencamp has also asked the McCain campaign to stop using his songs, and Jackson Brown has sued the campaign over the use of his song, Running on Empty. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from John Ryan in Juneau, Ann Hillman in Unalaska, and Casey Kelly in Kodiak. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., Dave Donaldson from Juneau, and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Miss our newscast today? Listen to APRN's Alaska Morning News, Economic Report, and News Nightly on the web at APRN.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.